Good afternoon. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. Ahead this hour, for a second time in as many weeks, the city of Fort Smith received news of jobs coming to the city. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda gives us the details. In our second half hour, the militant grammarian reminds us just how complicated the English language can be. She has a list of words with wildly different definitions depending on their use. After this afternoon show on Here and Now, the latest news from Washington, where security is tight ahead of the inauguration Wednesday. Also, music performance venues have been largely silent during the pandemic, but the recent COVID-19 relief bill has some help for struggling stages. Here and Now begins at 1 right after our show. And this program note, tomorrow NPR will provide live coverage of the inauguration of President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. That coverage will last until about 1 tomorrow afternoon, so we do not expect to have a noon edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow. We will be with you tomorrow evening at 7. Arkansas's new caseload of COVID-19, over 1,000 for the most recent monitoring period, but it is the second lowest single-day reporting of 2021. Yesterday, the Arkansas Department of Health reported more than 1,100 new and confirmed cases of the virus and another 32 deaths from coronavirus. There have now been 4,343 Arkansans die from COVID-19. Statewide, hospitalizations from the disease dropped by 8 patients, but there are still well more than 1,200 Arkansas hospital beds devoted to patients with COVID-19. A report from Northwest Arkansas healthcare providers last night indicated there are 130 COVID-19 patients in hospitals in Benton and Washington counties. That's an increase by 10 over the previous 24 hours. The ADH reports there are more than 22,000 active cases in the state. The Springdale School District is having to reschedule a COVID-19 vaccination clinic for some of its educators and staff after not receiving enough doses. Spokesman Trent Jones says the district will still host a clinic on Wednesday and Thursday, but employees who signed up for a Friday clinic will have to be rescheduled to another time. The largest school district in the state plans to work with community partners to order more doses and will host more clinics as those doses become available. The Fayetteville Public Library is reopening to the public today with limited service and health protocols in place. The reopening serves as sorts as a soft grand opening for the massive expansion of the library's footprint. Face coverings are required for all patrons 5 years old and older. Masks are available for anyone who needs one. The original Mountain Street entrance is the only entrance and exit to ensure building capacity limitations, and that building capacity limitation, 200 patrons. Visitors are asked to keep visits under 1 hour. Computers are unavailable at this time. Study rooms, meeting rooms, and extended seating not available at this time. David Johnson, the library's executive director, recently talked with Pete Hartman about the opening for an edition of Community Spotlight. We'll hear an expanded version of that conversation later on this edition of Ozarks at Large. The number 15 Arkansas women's basketball team lost to number 4 South Carolina on the road last night, 104-82. Up next, a game against Georgia in Athens next Monday night. And a scheduling note, Arkansas's game against Vanderbilt on January 28th canceled after Vanderbilt announced it would end its season early as it continued to deal with COVID-19 and other health-related issues. The National Weather Service predicts temperatures below freezing tonight with a warming trend to follow. Cloudy tonight, lows from 27 to 31 throughout the region. Tomorrow, sunny with highs from 51 to 55. And for Wednesday night, clouds with lows in the lower 40s. There is a 20% chance of rain tomorrow night in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. This week, two groups of people in Phase 1B of the COVID-19 vaccination rollout are eligible to receive the vaccine. They include people over the age of 70, as well as educators and staff at K-12 schools, higher education, and daycare facilities. But these vaccinations won't happen all at once. It's likely it will take weeks for everyone who wants a vaccine to get one. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek spoke with Dr. Jennifer Dillehay about the current demand and supply of vaccine doses in the state. Dr. Dillehay is the state epidemiologist and medical director for immunizations and outbreak response at the Arkansas Department of Health.
Where does the vaccination rollout stand in Arkansas at this moment?
Well, I'm glad you asked about that. So we are vaccinating folks in Arkansas with two different types of vaccines, a Pfizer vaccine and Moderna vaccine. They're both similar in that they use the same kind of vaccination technology. They're nucleic acid vaccines, and they are both very safe and effective. They are 95% effective in completely preventing illness with due to COVID-19 and 100% effective in preventing severe disease. So that's very hopeful for us in Arkansas. We are rolling the vaccines out through a variety of sites. Currently, we are providing vaccines through some hospitals and their clinics, and they're hosting some special events. But mostly we're providing them through local pharmacies. And as our vaccine allocations increase in Arkansas, we'll increase the number of pharmacies, but also be able to provide the vaccine through medical clinics throughout the state.
This week, the state moved to start offering the vaccines to teachers and school staff and people 70 years and older. But at the same time, pharmacies have very long wait lists, and some of them haven't received any shipments of the vaccine at all. Does that point to a lot of demand and not enough supply?
So with moving to phase 1B, which is includes people who are 70 and older, as well as people in education right now. So that's daycare, K through 12 grades and schools, and universities and colleges. This is a very sizable group. These are hundreds of thousands of people. And we only get a little more than 37,000 doses in Arkansas every week to vaccinate new people. So this really is a constricted supply to meet the needs of so many people. So the way that's being managed is the pharmacies that are receiving vaccine, and you can locate those pharmacies on the ADH website. But those pharmacies are making appointments for the future. We're trying to give them a steady supply each week, even though it's small, so they know how to plan. And then for groups like school districts or colleges and universities, we're asking them to work with their employers so that they can plan for a vaccination event. So then those folks can either get vaccinated when the supply is available locally for them to do a group event or some other special arrangement. We're hoping that if we can keep the vaccine supply to pharmacies and other locations around the state, people can plan ahead and then fill in when there's a need, so we can do a school district here and then the next time a different school district and roll that around the state as we are able to get enough vaccine to do those larger scale events.
And does every county get the same number of vaccine doses?
So right now we're working on breaking it down by population. The number of doses we get it averages out to be less than 500 doses per county, which is not very much. But some smaller counties get less and the larger counties get more. And we'll just have to keep chipping away at it until we are able to get an increased number of doses coming to the state.
Do you foresee the state getting more than about 38,000 doses a week anytime soon, or is this all we can expect for a while?
Right now, we're having to plan for that amount to come in for the next few weeks. We have not heard anything definite about an increase in our allocation. Of course, we're hoping for more sooner, but that has not taken place. So we're working on at least having a plan as we currently stand, and then we can rapidly scale up if more doses become available.
Last week, national media like the Washington Post reported that the Trump administration doesn't have the vaccine stockpile that it said it did. Has that impacted vaccine rollout in Arkansas at all?
So the Arkansas plan had not factored in that stockpile. We have an approach where we plan when we get official notification of the allocations coming. And so our plans, and we had not received any official notification of this stockpile, so we had not built our plans around it. Of course, everyone was disappointed when it really did not come to pass.
Can you give us an idea of the forces the state is subject to when it comes to this rollout in terms of how much does what happens in Arkansas depend on the vaccine manufacturers, for example?
Well, right now the allocations are based on the pro rata allocation per our state population. And we have a smaller state, so we're not receiving as many doses as other states. For that reason, we're working hard to communicate to the public what to expect. And we're hoping that the public will be patient and that those who are eligible will make arrangements for a vaccine at one location in their county. We're asking people not to call around and get on multiple appointment lists because that really confuses our planning in terms of the numbers for other counties. And also it prevents other people from getting on the waiting list. So we're asking people to just make one appointment and not get on multiple appointment lists.
And in terms of what Pfizer and Moderna are doing, where does their production stand?
So my understanding is that the pharmaceutical companies are collaborating with the federal government. One of the limiting factors are getting the raw materials that they need to make the vaccines. That has the supply for that has not been what was needed. So they're working with the federal government to be able to procure those raw materials to make the vaccines. And that, of course, depending on other industries to make those raw materials. So it's a coordinated and complicated process.
There's also an expectation that new vaccines will become available under the FDA's emergency authorization. How will the state respond as those come online?
Yes, we are hopeful that in the next month or two, we will have even a third vaccine that would become available. That would increase the number of vaccine doses available for Arkansans, which would be good news. And we do have plans for that those vaccines down the road as they become available. Our current plan has been developed in such a way is that it's scalable. We can increase the doses to pharmacies and clinics as more vaccine becomes available. But then we can also use additional vaccine to hold larger vaccine events. And I think that will also help to address the demand for vaccine doses in Arkansas.
A lot of people are excited about these vaccines. I think that's understandable. But can you give us a realistic picture of how long this vaccination process will actually take?
So I think it's realistic for us to be able to expect regular allocations to Arkansas. They may be small. They will increase over time. But it will be at least a few months before the general public can be vaccinated. So people need to know that and be patient. Encourage people to get vaccinated when it's their turn and not to wait. But if it's their turn, go ahead and take advantage of being able to get a dose. And then cheer each other on. I know many people would like for themselves to be vaccinated, but we can cheer each other on when other people are able to get vaccinated because this is all good news for Arkansas, and we need as many people to be as fully vaccinated as possible if we really want to turn this epidemic pattern around in our state.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like the I got vaccinated photo is the new I voted photo that people like to share during election season.
Yeah, it's exciting times, and we're so fortunate to have a vaccine so quickly that is proven to be safe and effective. People should know that there were no shortcuts, no steps were skipped in developing these vaccines in terms of their safety and efficacy. But because of new vaccine technology and the abundant funding that was made available through the federal government, we were able to complete many of the steps, including ramping up production and pre-making millions of doses. No pharmaceutical company would have ever done that prior to authorization by the FDA, but that's what the federal government funded the companies to do. So we have vaccines sooner than later, and soon I think the doses will be, the allocation of our doses will increase. It's just a matter of time.
And with the inauguration tomorrow and a new incoming Biden administration, is the state going to have to make any changes to the way it's running the vaccine program here?
I don't think that we will. I think it will be a continuation and probably some changes that will benefit us. So I don't anticipate any drastic changes. I just think that things will get better as time goes on.
Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Dillehay.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
That was Dr. Jennifer Dillehay speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek. Dr. Dillehay is the state epidemiologist and medical director for immunizations and outbreak response at the Arkansas Department of Health. She encourages anyone who is considering getting the COVID-19 vaccine to reference the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website for the most current information about its safety. Nineteen Pacific Islander organizations in the United States, including two in Arkansas, have organized to press for their civil rights and social justice. They successfully lobbied Congress and the federal government to restore Medicaid benefits for their people. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, the group held the first of two virtual press conferences last week titled "The Long Fight for the Good of Mankind," which frames their struggle.
The press conference, which opened with the Pacific Islander Choir, was attended by Pacific Islander groups from Hawaii, Arizona, Iowa, Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Michigan, Utah, and Washington, as well as political and religious leaders. Angela Edward, a Micronesian American organizer from Michigan, co-facilitated the virtual meeting.
So today we'll be reviewing the history of our journey, and then there will be a part two later on, which will further discuss implementation.
Edward is referring to a broken treaty struck in 1986 by the U.S. government called Compacts of Free Association, COFA for short, with the Federated States of Micronesia, the Republic of the Marshall Islands, and the Republic of Palau. Under the treaty, COFA citizens have been able to travel to, live, and work in the U.S. In exchange, the U.S. has exclusive military use of and access to their nation's lands, territorial waters, and airspace in the Pacific. These compacts are considered critical to U.S. national security. Most COFA migrants work and pay taxes, yet have been barred from certain U.S. entitlements, including Medicaid, stripped under U.S. welfare reform in 1996. But late last year, the benefit was reinstated by Congress due to legislative pressure from U.S. Senator Mazie Hirono, a Democrat from Hawaii, working in alliance with 390 Pacific Islander organizations, U.S. nonprofit centers, agencies, and medical providers. The entitlement was restored at a critical time as the COVID-19 pandemic grows worse among Pacific Islanders, says Melissa Leilon, executive director of Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese.
This pandemic has hit our community especially hard. Even though we have one of the smallest populations in the U.S., our people have had the highest numbers of people dying in these communities from this virus.
After centuries of colonization and U.S. nuclear testing, Pacific Islanders are sick with cancers, diabetes, hypertension, and now COVID-19. Again, Angela Edwards.
And it doesn't stop there. In Hawaii, the Micronesian population has accounted for over 30% of the deaths from COVID-19.
After participants took a moment of silence to remember loved ones lost to the pandemic, a video portraying their plight produced by Houston Hughes was screened.
As World War II came to a close, the United States successfully executed a campaign of island hopping across the Pacific, wresting control of one territory after another from Japan. When the war ended, the newly formed United Nations placed some of these territories under the protection and administration of the United States, with the goal that the U.S. would help them eventually become self-governing. 4 days after the agreement was signed, the U.S. drew up plans to establish within its new territory a collection of testing sites for nuclear weapons, the Pacific Proving Grounds. Commodore Ben Wyatt, then governor of the Marshall Islands, famously spoke to a group of islanders evacuated prior to testing.
All right, now, James, will you tell them that the United States government now wants to attempt to turn this great destructive force into something good for mankind, and that these experiments here at Bikini are the first step in that direction.
From 1946
to 1962, over 100 nuclear bombs were detonated, both in the atmosphere and underwater. The tests rendered many islands uninhabitable, poisoned plants and animals, killed islanders who had not been evacuated far enough, and left the survivors dealing with the fallout for generations to come.
The remainder of the hour and a half conference featured community organizers representing Dubuque Pacific Islander Health Project, Micronesian Coalition in Oklahoma, and Utah Micronesian Association, among many others, talking about how they are working with state and federal lawmakers on key concerns. Josie Howard with We Are Oceana, representing COFA migrants settled in Hawaii, detailed years of effort to obtain justly due medical benefits.
Our community here in Hawaii, they knew what was lacking, they knew what they needed, and they fought for it.
You can watch the entire conference video stream on Arkansas Coalition for Marshallese on Facebook. A second virtual conference is planned in the coming weeks. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The second United States Pacific Islander Coalition Conference will talk about the deployment of restored Medicaid benefits across all 50 states for COFA citizens. This is Ozarks at Large. Friday, Governor Asa Hutchinson applauded a second announcement this month of new jobs coming to Fort Smith. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
2 weeks, two different job creation announcements. During the city of Fort Smith's most recent proclamation Friday, Mars Pet Care announced a $145 million investment in its Fort Smith facility, which is expected to create 120 new full-time jobs with room for growth in the future. Fort Smith site director Michael Poffenbarger said everything they do as a company is driven by the goal of creating a better world for pets.
I see this passion for pets on display by all of our 300 associates who work at our site. While we all know this past year has been full of challenges, pets have been one of the silver linings. More people turn to pets and their unique ability to make our lives better. And many of us spent more time with our pets than ever before, including the 11 million Americans who welcomed a new pet last year. To help support pet parents and the ever-increasing role of pets in our lives, I'm excited to announce Mars Pet Care will be expanding our Fort Smith facility, which is a key manufacturing hub for our business.
Mars Pet Care has now invested about $200 million in its Fort Smith facility since it opened in 2009. Governor Asa Hutchinson said the state's economic development team is always recruiting new business and new industry, but the joint mission of economic development is to support those businesses that are already here.
And this expansion is just as important to us as any new business that will come in. We support expanding our existing businesses here. That's the first best opportunity. And so we're glad to be a partner in this effort. And the fact that you located here in 2008, 2009 timeframe, the fact that you have confidence in our workforce, that whenever you look at an expansion opportunity, you have many alternatives, You selected Arkansas, so we're grateful, all of the Mars family and the leadership, for that confidence.
Friday's announcement comes just over a week after Jonesboro-based Hytrol announced it would be expanding to the River Valley. The company is investing $20 million to open an advanced manufacturing operation in Fort Smith, which will create 250 new jobs within 5 years. Secretary of Commerce Mike Preston said he was recently asked how Arkansas is able to continue announcing jobs and projects in the midst of a pandemic.
Simple answer is leadership, and it's our governor. And he has not let his foot off the gas pedal and pushed us forward to make sure that we can still find ways to create and grow jobs in our economy, even in the midst of a pandemic. So it's very happy and pleased to still be able to do that and start the year off right by coming to Fort Smith twice in 2 weeks. And hopefully we'll be back again very soon, Mr. Mayor, because it's always great to be in your city.
The facility expansion will begin this month and is scheduled for completion in 2022. With the investment, Mars Pet Care will add more than 200,000 square feet and two additional production lines, increasing production capacity by more than 40%. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And tomorrow evening on our 7 p.m. edition of Ozarks at Large, more about animals. Are domestic pets at risk for COVID-19? The Arkansas Department of Health veterinarian provides us the latest positivity data.
On very rare occasions, dogs and cats have been infected with the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and some of them have become sick. The data that we have is that there have been, in the world so far, 170 total animals from 21 countries.
That report on tomorrow night's 7 o'clock edition of Ozarks at Large, as our noon show tomorrow makes way for live coverage from NPR of the presidential inauguration. That coverage scheduled to begin at 10 tomorrow morning on KUAF and last until about 1. But you will also be able to hear Jacqueline Froelich's Pets and COVID-19 story Sunday morning at 9 on our next edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large on 91.3. Each Sunday morning, we collect some of our favorite pieces from the previous week and put them together for a weekend edition of our program. And don't forget, you can always ask your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large to hear the most recent daily edition of our show. And we're always available as a free podcast from all the major podcast distributors. 8 Arkansas citizens on Friday filed suit in the Circuit Court of Pulaski County in Little Rock, claiming Arkansas's Attorney General, Leslie Rutledge, spent taxpayer money to, quote, engage in political and highly partisan legal and judicial activities that are not in the interests of the state of Arkansas. The plaintiffs cite how the Attorney General, on November 9th last year, joined 10 other Republican-affiliated attorneys general in a lawsuit urging the United States Supreme Court to reverse a Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision allowing mail-in ballots to be received 3 days after Election Day. The justices refused to hear the case, which led to the January 6th election certification of President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. The plaintiffs are also suing Arkansas Attorney General Rutledge for joining with 18 other Republican attorneys general on December 9th to ask the U.S. Supreme Court to delay a December 14th Electoral College vote and block the swing states of Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin from casting electoral votes. The nation's highest court again unanimously refused to hear that case. The plaintiffs also claim the Attorney General, who's running for Arkansas governor in 2022, is using her office to raise money for her campaign titled Arkansas is in the Fight. We did ask the lead plaintiff, as well as Little Rock attorney Richard Mays, for this report. Both responded but declined to be interviewed. The Attorney General has gone on record claiming the lawsuit is frivolous, and Attorney General Rutledge says she will seek dismissal. Governor Asa Hutchinson, Arkansas First Lady Susan Hutchinson, and Arkansas's Secretary of Health, Dr. Jose Romero, have all received their first dose of COVID-19 vaccine. 4 school teachers also received their first shots during an event at the Arkansas Department of Health yesterday. It's part of the acknowledgement of the state shifting into the 1B phase of inoculations. Theater Squared presents Schoolgirls, or The African Mean Girls Play. This comedy features Paulina, the reigning queen bee at Ghana's most exclusive boarding school, Erica, a new student with undeniable talent and beauty, and the Miss Global Universe pageant. On stage through February 14th, 777-7473 or theater2.org for tickets and information.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is Ozarks at Large. Across the street from where I'm sitting right now is a sign reading, "Building Now Open." That building, just outside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, is the Fayetteville Public Library. During the pandemic, the library has been delivering books curbside during a couple of long periods when the building was closed to the public. First, like so many other facilities and institutions, it was closed because of the virus. But recently, it was closed because of the final phases of a massive expansion. Recently, Pete Hartman, the host of KUAF's Community Spotlight, heard each weekday morning, talked with David Johnson, the executive director of the library, about the new services and more connected to the library.
On March 2, 2019, the Fayetteville community broke ground for an expansion to the Fayetteville Public Library. Almost 2 years later, it is open to the public today. Yesterday, I spoke with a very busy David Johnson over the phone. He's executive director at the library.
I'm so excited. We've been talking about this expansion, and we've been watching the building grow here on the site, and we're now finally able to open the doors and let the public in to see what their public library has changed into and how we've grown along with the community's needs.
In just 1 year from that March 2019 groundbreaking, though, the COVID-19 pandemic would begin affecting the pace of construction on the library's expansion. Originally expected to open around October of last year, David says to be able to open today is a testament to both those working construction and those in the community supporting the project.
We've experienced some delays around supply chain issues. We've had some of the different trades have issues with quarantining due to pandemic exposure. And so we have things slowed down, but you know, what's amazing is, you know, it's how you behave during times of adversity show your true character. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, everyone associated with this project has turned out to be golden, from Crossland Construction to all the various trades to our community. Everybody understands and everybody is being patient, but today we really get to open the doors and show folks what we've been so proud of building, and now it's here.
David admits that opening up during a continuing pandemic isn't the greatest option, but with the much added space, it will be easier to maintain social distancing.
You know, we have counseled quite extensively with the City Board of Health. All of the physicians on that board have toured. We've taken notes, and we've come up with some very healthy guidelines for how we can open this building. You know, we've added 103,000 square feet. It's going to be spacious. It's going to give us opportunities to let people in to the collections. So we felt a certain need to say, hey, we need people back in the building, getting into those books and getting into the DVDs and taking things home. But we want to also let people see all the various components of what we've brought online, whether it's the event center or the innovation center or the teaching kitchen and the youth services spaces. All of those things, we've worked hard to make sure that people can be safe, we can be spread out, all of the surfaces will be clean, and, you know, we're just going to limit our attendance to 200 here initially. So even though we could have a few more, we think we're going to be safe with 200, and in time, as more people get vaccinated and as we begin to open up a little more, we'll increase that attendance number from 200 to 300 and so forth. But, you know, again, our priority is safety, but we're just, you know, we're too excited to sit on this fabulous expansion any much longer before we can let the public in and say, this is our Fayetteville Public Library. Look what we've done. We're just excited to be at this stage of opening up and letting people into their library and to enjoy the wonders of what our library has become.
David Johnson is executive director at the Fayetteville Public Library. The library is now open, limited capacity for quick access to collections, but curbside pickup will still be available. For more, you can call 479-856-7219 or online at faylib.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Pete Hartman.
And you can hear Pete Hartman and the Community Spotlight every weekday morning at 6:30 and 8:30 Inside Morning Edition on 91.3 KUAF.
The Reverend John Wilkins was a pastor who played the blues in and out of church.
He wanted to give the people a positive message and to make people happy and make them feel good through his music. And that would be his biggest pain.
In October, he died of COVID-19. A remembrance of the Reverend John Wilkins this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered this afternoon from 3 to 6 on 91.3 KUAF.
This is Ethel Simpson of Fayetteville, Arkansas. I'd like to say that radio has enlarged my understanding and enjoyment of the world, from music and politics to the local programming of the excellent KUAF 91.3.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me via Zoom is the militant grammarian, Catherine Sherrills. Catherine, welcome back.
Thanks. Kyle, we wouldn't have been able to do this segment for as long as we have, except for the fact that English is a complicated language.
Correct. Absolutely.
Let's talk about a few of those words that are spelled and pronounced the same but have multiple meanings. Mm-hmm. We've talked about homonyms before, so let's do a quiz.
Okay.
I know that you and our listeners know all of these words and their homonyms, but it's not always so obvious how versatile the words are until you look at them like this.
Okay.
So, Kyle, I know your dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They are not exactly soft-spoken when things are going on around them.
No, not at all.
What is it that they do?
They bark.
But bark has another meaning.
On a tree.
Yeah, bark on a tree.
Yeah.
The dog's bark can be either a verb or a noun. You can say the dog's bark. The dog's bark is loud. That's a noun. Or you can say the dogs have barked. But the bark of a tree can't be a verb. At least not in my universe it can't be.
No.
The way people turn things into verbs, who knows?
True.
If your dogs won't settle down, their commotion might put you in trouble with your neighbors. You might say the dogs put you in a...
predicament. A jam.
Yes, there you go. And the jam is also what?
That's something you put on your toast.
So what's the forceful use of the word jam?
Well, to shove into something, to force. Like,
Yeah, like jam your suitcase full of shoes or something.
Yes.
Okay, Kyle, I know winter is not your favorite time of year.
No.
So it's not your favorite...
season.
What?
Season.
But winter is a good time to eat soup and chili as long as it's well...
seasoned.
Yeah. And what's the third meaning of seasoned?
Oh.
Applied to...
Kind of a way to say someone has done something for a long time?
Yeah, experience,
yeah.
Right.
Okay, yeah, experience, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I was saying at the beginning, is that we know all of these, but you don't often think about the fact that that's the same word.
Right.
Kyle, you can buckle the buckle on your belt, but what's a scary homonym for buckle?
Oh, like if a bridge buckles and it collapses.
Yeah. Collapse under weight. And then there's buckle up and buckle down. What's the difference there?
Well, buckle up, I mean, it could mean when you get in your car and you put on the seatbelt, or it could just mean get ready for something crazy.
Right, yeah. And then what about buckle down?
Concentrate.
Hard work.
Get serious, yes.
Mm-hmm. And wrapping up buckle, there's dessert.
I don't know a buckle dessert.
Have you not ever had a fruit buckle? Blueberry buckle.
No.
It's an old-fashioned, it's a cake made with fruit, typically blueberries, and has a streusel topping.
I like that. It's fun to say blueberry buckle.
I've never had one either. But I do remember hearing the word used that way.
Hmm.
The last set of homonyms for today was featured in a Facebook meme I saw recently. It was a Venn diagram, where labeled circles overlap.
Yeah.
Should we explain that more to people? They know what a Venn diagram is?
Well, so you could have a circle that is labeled people who like yogurt. And then you could have another circle, people who are concerned about their weight. And a third circle that's people who enjoy blueberries in their diet. And some of those people would be all three, right? You could be concerned about your weight, like yogurt, and want blueberries.
Those would be the overlapping, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But you might just be someone who likes yogurt, and you don't care about your weight, and you hate blueberries. So you, yeah. That part of that circle would be out, yeah.
So this had to do with the word squash. So what are the three meanings of squash, Kyle?
Oh, this is great, because one is a food that comes out of your garden.
A vegetable. Mm-hmm.
Right. Another means to pulverize or flatten.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is a sport that is, I think, related to racquetball in a way.
So this Venn diagram had witty, pared down labels for squash. And the labels were sport, vegetable, way to die.
And the overlap, of course, covered them all. Our militant grammarian is Catherine Sherrills. This is Ozarks at Large. The 2020 elections are over, yes, but the results from the elections make these first weeks in 2021 highly important political weeks. Nationally, there is a transfer of presidential administrations tomorrow, and last week, the Arkansas legislative session opened, a session that is underway again today after a holiday weekend. As the first few days of the legislative session closed, Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, asked John Brummett, a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, about the lawmakers' early work in 2021 in both Little Rock and Washington, D.C.
John, we've got the first week of the legislative session pretty much in the books in terms of what they're going to do. Governor gave his State of the State speech. Stand Your Ground advanced as we considered and thought that it would. And we got our first COVID-19 case among the legislature. Everything went about according to schedule, didn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of the first week you would expect. And I think conservative bills are going to go on schedule, and it's going to be a fast-moving schedule. And that's just the way it's going to be in this environment.
Tell me what you thought of the governor's speech in terms of what he outlined in that speech, the reaction from the legislature to that speech, and it was the last one he's going to give before a regular session General Assembly.
Well, as I wrote today, I found he thanked the legislators for their warm reception, which I said wasn't. It was polite and tepid, not rude. It just, it was the kind of reception you give somebody who's giving a speech you've heard for 7 years before, that they get a little weary. And he's also out of touch with some of these new folks or the new legislature to his right, particularly on the thing that he spent the most time talking about, the most minutes, the most words, the hate crimes issue. He's not an impassioned speaker, so I'm not going to say he gave an impassioned case argument for the hate crimes law, but he had some good substance. He quoted a rabbi, he quoted a Chamber of Commerce official, and then when he was done, there was not a single hand clap, not even from the, as I referred to it, the skeletal remains of the Democratic caucus. There was no response. It turns out Democrats had made a calculated decision. If we clap for him on this, then it's going to give everybody, it's going to show everybody that the only people for the Republican governor's bill are Democrats, and it's going to sort of embolden or give some license to oppose it to Republicans, if only a smattering of applause came from Democrats. So they kept quiet for a reason, a tactical reason. And it was not a moment of great Arkansas oratory and not a particularly eventful address. Adequate, fine, nothing wrong with it. Just didn't lift anything, I didn't think.
I think that if you are a supporter of passage of the hate crime bill, I thought one of the best arguments that the governor made in that State of the State speech was he said that it does apply equally to the law, that that enhanced penalties would be used against someone who may have killed somebody because they are white just as much as if because they are black. And I'm not sure if that translated to all of the legislators or not, but I thought that was actually a pretty good point that he made there if you're supportive of passage of that bill.
Well, sure. If one of the protections in the bill for a crime committed on basis of hate of your group is race. Race doesn't mean just black people. It means if you killed somebody because they're white or any color. Sure, that's obvious. But I think most of these rural conservatives, I think more things are about race than we care to admit. I think that I've heard people say this gives a special right to these people who've been working all these decades for equal rights. This gives a special right. What are they talking about? They're talking about civil rights. They're talking about black people. So he was trying to address that. And it's unfortunate it has to be even cast in racial terms. So it's a fine argument, but it's an obvious argument that should have occurred to people before that. But it hadn't. Let's face it. One of the major oppositions to this bill is the protection for sexual orientation and gender identity. There are people who believe that's not a condition. That's a choice of behavior, which is ridiculous. And they at least want to take that out. So that, and he did, the governor understandably chose not to even go there. It is possible with 9 House members being Democrats on House rules, it's possible the governor could get this thing out of the House. And then we could see if they could build pressure on that stone wall in the House Judiciary Committee. But I'm not optimistic.
All right. We'll see how that plays out in the coming weeks here. Let's shift our attention to Washington, D.C. Congress on Wednesday passed a second article of impeachment against President Trump. Do you think that it was handled properly, and could it have been handled differently from what you witnessed?
Yes, I think it was handled properly. I think when the President of the United States denies the certified election, an electoral college vote of our constitutional democratic republic process, when he calls it corrupt, when he calls people together and fires them up to go down and show strength at the U.S. Capitol, and they invade the Capitol and do damage and personal harm, that is an act of insurrection, and you have no choice. You have no constitutional option other than to enforce the Constitution and impeach him for what is on its face, on live television, an impeachable act, a seditious act. And I don't know how else you act. They wrote a quick, simple article, one thing, gave rise to an insurrection, brought it up, had a debate, voted on it. I don't know what else you're supposed to do. You got any better ideas? I mean, I don't know other than not do it. I get kind of worked up about this. Republicans, the argument, never mind. You may want to ask me about that.
I think that the main pushback that I heard, particularly from the Arkansas delegation, was about the process. You know, that this
doesn't
have enough time to air this out properly. It's such a solemn
responsibility. How much time do you need to see people marauding through the U.S. Capitol?
Well, I agree. I'm thinking to myself as I'm reading some of those responses, they were witness to the crime. I mean,
well, to the extent that they're hiding in bathrooms, they were witnesses, and their political base was trying to get in and threaten them with harm. This, you know, the Arkansas congressional delegation, whatever. They are what they are. They did the right thing on certifying the election eventually, except for Crawford, who doesn't count. But basically, let me put it this way. They have spent 4 years pandering to the Trump base because they're afraid of it. Then they spent last Wednesday, a week ago, hiding from the Trump base because they were afraid of it. Then they declined to impeach the Trump base, vote to impeach Trump because they're afraid of the reaction of the Trump base. Fear, 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 fear times three. That's what it's all about. And I find it utterly disgraceful. Okay.
what are your expectations for the Senate? It goes down there. Senate Majority Leader today, Mitch McConnell, says he's not taking it up. Senate Majority Leader Schumer tomorrow or down the road says that they will. What do you think is going to play out in the Senate?
McConnell's not going to do it. It's hard to say what that means. These things don't occur without some reason. When the New York Times and the Washington Post, which are the best papers, when they report that sources are saying McConnell is furious with the president and is ready to cut the cord with the president and might actually vote for impeachment and believes impeachment is appropriate, then that happened because McConnell wanted that word out. Now, whether that translates to his delaying this until Schumer and the Democrats can run it, and Trump is gone, and maybe it would be easier for some of his fellow Republicans to vote for it. Those who want to be president might want to take Trump out of the equation by convicting him. That's possible. It is possible that by delaying it until the next Senate and McConnell's strained signals, that all of that means they might come up with, 17 Republicans out of 48 who would vote for it. I'm holding out the possibility that under the next circumstance could happen. But I'm not sure. I don't know. It's an uphill climb. But right now, if I had to pick, I would say convicting in the Senate, conviction in the Senate, I'd give that better odds than I would passing a hate crimes law in Arkansas to bring these two things together. Not real good odds for either, but I'd make them a little better. Now, you want to talk about a strange new presidency. Joe Biden is going to try to get through this inauguration without civil war. And then he's got a big stimulus. He wants to give everybody $2,000. He wants to do a lot of other things, big policy things. And I guess he's asked the Senate, can you do your impeachment trial half a day and then let me have some of my bills considered the other half? What a weird, weird, troubling time we are in.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and he talked with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. There is more political coverage at talkbusiness.net, and you can read John Brummett's columns at arkansasonline.com.
I pledge to be a president who seeks not to divide, but unify.
After a turbulent transition of power, Joe Biden now inherits many challenges in a divided nation. He's set to be inaugurated on the same stage where rioters overtook the Capitol. I'm Rachel Martin. Join NPR Wednesday for special live coverage of the inauguration from NPR News.
Join KUAF and NPR for live coverage of the presidential inauguration ceremony tomorrow morning beginning at 10. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Springdale. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large included Zuzana Sitek, Jacqueline Froelich, Antoinette Grajeda, and Pete Hartman. Our conversations between Roby Brock with Talk Business and Politics and John Brummett, a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, are part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. Our theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. And one more time, a reminder that we do not expect to have a noon edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow because of NPR's live coverage of the inauguration. We will be with you tomorrow night at 7 for a Wednesday night edition of Ozarks at Large. Remember, you can subscribe for free to the Ozarks at Large daily email newsletter. You can do that at KUAF.com. It comes to you every weekday afternoon with links to everything that was on that day's show, so you can click through and listen. You can sign up at KUAF.com, and it is absolutely free. Thank you so much for being with us on this Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. From the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Please take care of yourself. We'll talk again very soon.